This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Lockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Lido, here's High Taylor with Sportsline.
And good morning, everybody, from live inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito. It is Sportsline on a Saturday morning. This is Ty Taylor. I'm not alone. We somehow got Jim Taylor to come back inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios after making the long trip to Spring Valley last night to see the Rockridge Rockets pick up a win over the Hall Red Devils. I was in Mendota watching the Mercer County Golden Eagles pick up a win over the Mendota Trojans. Welcome back inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. This show has been going on since when, Jim Taylor?
1979, when this great radio station signed on. And again, the first ever football game here, they should ask the question that was broadcast on local trivia nights, was Alito and Galva, broadcast by a young whippersnapper by the name of John Hosha. You made a farther trip, though, to Mendota. That
yes,
is a
I
long
did.
Trip because Hall Township is direct to basically I-80, get off I-80 for 4 miles. You got to, I think you get off the Princeton exit
yes,
to get
you
to, and then you drive through, I think one of the counties is Lee County. I forget, and then Mendota's back in LaSalle County. I think so. It's a difficult way to get
there. There's a lot to get to this morning, of course, but I don't want to bury the lead. You mentioned off the Princeton exit. Now, on the way home from Mendota last night, we had a full car in the WRMJ station vehicle. I was driving. Monty Smith was in the passenger seat. Teague Smith was in the back seat, and Teagan Taylor rode home with us as well. Mercer County sophomore cheerleader extraordinaire. We stopped at the Princeton Wendy's, and we're behind like probably 10 cars in the drive-thru because Princeton also was at home last night against Erie Prophetstown. So a packed night at Wendy's. Now we do this program every Saturday morning throughout the school year from August to the end of May. And I think this is probably the most fun Saturday in the entire IHSA sports calendar. There's just so much hype and conjecture and speculation around the playoff bracket reveal, which is coming up tonight. Of course, it'll be part of the annual WRMJ Pigskin playoff preview, which gets underway at 7. The bracket's coming out in the 8 p.m. hour tonight. But this is always such a special day on the IHSA calendar. I think 256 teams qualify for the playoffs. We'll learn where everybody's playing tonight.
Yeah, no question. But I want to circle back quickly and just say, Teagan was in the car with you last night
yes,
coming home. So, by the way, tip of the cap to Ashley Clark,
yeah.
Her last night as the cheerleading advisor. And I saw, it's weird, small town stuff, I saw her mother and her mother-in-law at Circle K this morning. But this is the biggest day for the IHSA every year. It is the biggest day because there's 256 schools still potential. It's bigger than the state championship weekends because of, like you say, the conjecture and speculation. And the proof is over the years, you know, early in the process when their website would always crash because of the pairing. So this is the biggest night of the year, biggest day of the year for the IHSA when these pairings are announced. And that's why, honestly, football is treated a little bit differently than other sports because you have to qualify to get into the postseason. And there's still basically the wild card is with the split in the brackets. And I know our guest today, Steve Soucy, is going to get into that. You know, what is the north and south split going to be? What's the imaginary line, so to speak? And I think there's some wiggle room in 2A. And that's one of the great things about that, could kind of upset the apple cart maybe a little bit in terms of seeds in the north and the south. And then he tells the great story about a coin flip in 3A, 4A is going to be really interesting to determine those brackets tonight.
Yeah, so we'll get into a lot with Steve Soucy, as you mentioned, who is our guest. We've been lucky the last 3 years now to have Steve Soucy from Friday Night Drive with Shaw Media join us on this program on the day of the playoff bracket reveal. He, of course, is the top high school football expert in the state, is what I say. He's the number one bracket guy. He was up last night. I was watching his live stream with Matt Rodewald on Friday Night Drive at like 2:30 in the morning. They were still on there, and there was like something like 300 or 400 live viewers still for that at that time. So he puts in a lot of work. So we'll get a lot of those questions answered about 2A specifically, which we know that's where Rock Ridge will be. And, you know, three of the other schools in the track likely will be in the 2A field as well. Speaking about Newman, Riverdale, Erie, Provincetown, Monmouth, Roseville, and Princeton will be headed into the 3A playoffs. So we talk a lot about just what the brackets should look like and just general stuff as we look up and down the postseason picture with Steve Soucy. He'll join us here, I would say, in about 20 or so minutes when we'll get to him. And that conversation will be probably 30 to 40 minutes long, I would think.
Yeah, and the, you know, a couple of the items he projects where Wilmington is going to be, 2A or 3A. I'll let him decipher that. But the one thing that I didn't realize, kind of knew it, but I think he said there'll be 7 of the 32 teams in 2A are going to be 9-0 heading into week 10.
And something that he was talking about is there's, I believe, 26 9-0 teams in the state, and it looks like 7 are going to be in 2A, which is really interesting. That looks like that's a field that's going to be very challenging. We do know Rock Ridge will almost certainly be the number one seed in the North in 2A with their 9-0 finish. And then with their, you know, surplus of playoff points or opponents' wins, whatever you want to call them, they should pretty easily be the top seed in the North in 2A. So we'll get to all of that. We'll let Steve Soucy, like you said, decipher that. He's smarter than you and I combined, probably, as I don't think there'll be much argument there. But let's speak a little bit about Week 9 before we turn the page, do our focus to the playoffs, which, of course, are coming up tonight. We'll get the brackets in Round 1 next weekend. So Rock Ridge will start with them, as we mentioned, a perfect regular season. First 9-0 regular season for Rock Ridge since 2013 in football. They'll head into the 2A playoffs likely as the number one seed in the 2A North, as I mentioned. They'll head in as the number one ranked team in the final Associated Press poll as well. What'd you think of the Rockets' performance? You were there in Spring Valley last night. The final score, Rock Ridge 48, Hall 21.
Well, the first 24 minutes, they built a 35-6 lead. They were up 21-0. They kind of took control of the game, and they were able to parlay three turnovers into points, 21 points in the first half last night, two interceptions by Chase Wheatley and a fumble recovery in the end zone that was recovered by Aaron Wheatley. And so they were in control at halftime, up 35-6. But, you know, I know coaches, when they view games and they assess things, the second half was a much different story last night. So Hall Township was limited to 4 first downs in the first half, but they finished the game last night 16 first downs. That's probably the most first downs that Rock Ridge has allowed this season. And the Rockets allowed 187 rushing yards last night. Don't see that too often. 203 passing yards. And it was crazy. In the third quarter, Hall gets the ball to start the third quarter, and they had an 11-minute drive where they scored. So they had the ball for 11 minutes and scored. And in that drive, it's such a crazy game. In that drive, they had 2 15-yard penalties, and they overcame that and scored. So I think at one point last night, in that drive that took 11 minutes, it was first and 36 for Hall Township, but they're able to convert. So they really did a good job last night of moving the ball against Rock Ridge. Like I said, the numbers speak for themselves. But again, you worry a little bit about it. And Coach Graves said in the postgame, you know, just about kind of the emotion maybe in the second half wasn't there for the Rockets because they were up 35-6, and they're hoping to coast to maybe a Mercy Rule game, but it didn't happen that way. Still, it's perspective. What, he scored 48 points last week, really happy with that performance, but scored 48 last night, not so happy with the performance, at least in the second half. But the game was never in question last night as the Rockets prevail. And looking at Rock Ridge statistically last night, surprisingly, they did have one turnover and interception. You just haven't seen that too often with Schweigen, three interceptions in nine games for him this season. But 7 of 14, 126 yards passing, one touchdown, one interception. Rockets had 22 first downs last night, so they moved the ball pretty consistently. 29 rushing attempts for 289 yards. And then Tommy Sowards, 14 carries, 132 yards. And a good night for Tanner Dye last night, 11 catches for 94 yards. And then receiving-wise, Owen Steele, three catches for 42 yards. Now, he left the game in the second half, did not return, but it was just kind of precautionary, not a serious injury. And then Tanner Dye also didn't play, I think, about the last half of the fourth quarter, but nothing serious with him. But we're in that time of the year where bumps and bruises start to add up. And I tell you, I was impressed with Hall Township. They're kids, man. They played some inspired football last night in the second half when they know they're not going into the playoffs. They're 3-5, and they're down 35-6 in the first half. And I do like some of their, a little bit of their talent level. And I've always thought that school, if they can get some continuity with their coaching staff, which they haven't had, this is another first-year coach with Nick Sterling. Now, his son is a tight end, Chase Sterling, that had a good night last night, is a sophomore. So hopefully they can keep him around. But it's bananas for me. It's a co-op with Putnam County. Yeah. You want to give kids the opportunity, but in the long run, if they ever get in the playoffs again, you know, they're at 614 is their enrollment with the co-op.
Yeah, I was talking about that with Monty last night because he was looking through that. I don't think he knew that they co-op with Putnam County because he was looking at what their enrollment was. And I was like, yeah. And I told him the story about how a few years ago it was Mac Resetich's senior year, which he's now at Illinois, of course, playing in the secondary. And they won five games. But then, like you said, they're a 4A team in the playoffs, and their first round game was Sacred Heart Griffin, yeah. I think, and Ken Leonard's last year there.
Oh, man.
And it did not go well for the Hall Putnam County Red Devils that day. So you're right, it is interesting. Now, I don't know what the split is of how many kids they get from Putnam County that
play. On their roster, they identify
Putnam County. Oh, that's right, they do, yeah.
Hall kid. And I will say this, too, and I know Coach Graves, we were talking about last night. Every time I've went over there when Rockridge has played, it's weird stuff that goes on. And I remember the one night was terrible weather-wise. And when I was doing the post-game interview, his wife, Daphne, was holding the umbrella over us. I thought was awesome. And somebody got a picture of it. But I don't think you've been to Hall Township.
I never have. That's the only place in the Commerce I've been to.
I love their setup because there's no track. So the stands are right on the sideline. And you worry about sometimes if a punt goes errant, you know, on either sideline, the ball can wind up in the actual stands. Or, you know, if those kids are running at a high clip, you always worry about, are they going to slide into the stands? And I think there was a play last night where that was close to happening. But again, you're right on top of the field. And our broadcast vantage point, that's the best place to broadcast a game from because you're up at a decent level and you're right close to the field.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think Mercer kind of, Hall is on Mercer County's schedule next year. I don't remember, though, if that's a home game or a road game for the Gold Eagles. We have a listener checking in. It's one of our bosses, Rusty Dunn. He's saying, listening great from Pekin. He was saying, though, he might go to the California coast because that's where he listened to week one, so he might want to listen to the playoff show tonight from there. So hello, Rusty Dunn, who couldn't make it to Mendota last night, but we appreciate his help throughout the season. Sideline reporter extraordinaire, Rusty
Love
Dunn,
it,
right, as a WRMJ alum. So I think we can talk a little about Mercer County. Golden Eagles closed the season with a win last night. They beat Mendota on the road 33-10. Really nice effort for Mercer County. Long road trip, of course, about 2 hours one way to get there. Coming in on a six-game losing streak. Mendota had been playing well this season for the most part, but Mercer County really controlled that game. Never trailed, scored the first touchdown. Led it, I believe, by a score of 7-3 at halftime off the top of my head. And then pull away in the second half, 33-10, the final score. Nice night from quarterback John Baldwin, his last game at Mercer County, 6-10 passing, 124 yards, two touchdowns. He rushed for two touchdowns as well.
and intercepted a pass on defense. Tannen Whitehall, 85 rushing yards and a touchdown for Mercer County on the ground in his last game for the Golden Eagles as well. Really happy for the kids and for Coach Lucas. A challenging year, of course, you know, got away from him early in the year with that string of losses, but great way to end the season on a positive note and get that second win of the year last year.
Yeah, and I was happy too. I haven't seen them play at all this year, but I hear many in the community talk about the senior class and a quality group of kids they are, and that's I'm glad they got a win and go out that way. And you know, I know the last couple of years, well, last year there's some crazy things happening with, you know, the season and those kids having to deal with that, but playing to the finish line. And that senior class, how many kids were in that senior class again, Ty?
12.
And that's a great number for those kids to stick around. And you always see the pictures when the season ends, and you feel for those kids that aren't playing a 10th week. And I know you talked to Caden Terrell. I that's the only game I saw this year, the Saturday game at Newman. And I remember watching that game, and I told your mom, I said, man, that Terrell kid's tough playing every snap. So I'm glad they go out with a victory. And, you know, we're all homers here, and I wish they were playing a Week 10 somehow, because this town, it's just a little bit different when the local schools and the playoffs on a Saturday afternoon.
You mentioned Caden Terrell. He was on our high school sports spotlight series this week. He was a fantastic interview, really, really good. And like you said, he's one of those kids, like all those senior kids, they play really hard, like Tannen we mentioned, and John Baldwin and Eli Burns. He's so fun to watch play, and he got a carry last night at fullback late in the game. Normally, you know, played guard for them offensively and then middle linebacker for defense. And I made a mistake by starting to name some of these kids because I'm going to forget some of them. Mm-hmm. But Lucas Marston had a great season, I thought, for Mercer County. He had an awesome touchdown catch last night, 57 yards from his tight end spot, shed a tackle, and then, you know, won the foot race. Maybe we could say barely won the foot race to the end zone, but got there to get a touchdown from 57 yards. Trey Zeitler is a kid who played fullback. Cooper Lampkin played fullback last night for them, gave them really tough yards. Both kind of undersized for that position, but played really hard throughout the season. It was a bummer that Mason Gray got hurt earlier in the year. He had such a great year. He was a first-team all-conference running back last year in the track, but his senior season was cut short, unfortunately. Spencer Andreessen, big night for them last night, recovered a fumble on defense. Holden DeMuth has caught touchdown passes the past 2 weeks too. So I know I'm probably forgetting a kid or two in that senior group, but yeah, they're all great kids, played really hard all year, and that's what the high school football experience is all about, for sure.
Well, and that too, and you kind of reflect on the season, and football is one of those rare sports where this is, you know, you don't play tackle football in your adult life.
Right. I mean, that's what Coach Lucas said last night.
I mean, you just don't. But I think from your observation, too, we start looking at where is this league at, you know, and we can talk about, well, is it going to be regional scheduling? I don't think that IHSA proposal is going to pass.
I don't think so either.
It'll still be a Three Rivers Conference. So as you kind of assess the talent level in the league, so Mendota sounds like they're kind of trekking upwards a little bit with, you know, their scores this year. And even Spring Valley Hall, I think other than that week – 7 game where they got throttled by Monmouth Roseville, and then last night the game got away from them early, and then they, you know, I think their other game that was kind of a little bit lopsided, week 1 with a new coach against Orion.
The game was 21-21 though at one point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other games they've played this year in the league, pretty competitive. So that's the one thing, if you're looking at Mercer County and how they stack up with the kids they have coming back next year, and then looking at the rest of the league, you need to start thinking about that and what is their position and how do they make a significant step upward next year.
You got to, and you look at their schedule next year. Now, they're going to be really young. They don't have very many seniors, and the thing that worries me is just when you have that, you know, it's tough to get off to a fast start, and their schedule next year in this order, now I could have the order wrong. It's Princeton week 1, Monmouth Roseville week 2, Rockridge week 3, Newman week 4, Riverdale week 5. So it's like, I mean, you hit the ground running. And wow, I mean, those are probably the best 5 teams they'll play all year, or in weeks 1 through 5. Yeah, so it'll be a challenging start for them. But that's life in this conference. And I talked about this, I think, last week, or earlier this week with Matt Randazzo on his show Off the Air with Matt Randazzo, talking about the teams in the track and the playoffs. The Three Rivers is a conference that if you qualify for the playoffs,
you deserve to be there. And there are some leagues where teams get in and you watch them play in the first round and you're like, this team is not one of the 32 best teams in 1A or 2A or whatever. That's not the case in the Three Rivers. If you win five games in this league, you 100% deserve to be in the playoffs because you've had to beat, I think, multiple good teams to get there. And that's something we talked about with Mercer County. The fact is, you know, in the Lincoln Trail, you didn't have to beat good teams to get in the playoffs. There were normally at least five teams that were pretty bad, let's be honest, that you knew you were going to
be. They would probably be in the playoffs.
They 100% would be a playoff team in the Lincoln Trail or the Lincoln Land or whatever it's called now. Without a doubt, they'd win five games in that league. But again, this is the league they should be in. These are the teams they should be playing. So we don't need to get into that.
That's the example of though playing in the league and playing the level of competition. That's like always back in prior to consolidation in the Alito Olympic Conference days, they always played basically up in enrollment during the regular season and then would play schools their size in the postseason and have deep runs in the postseason. And the Olympic in the 90s, in the 2000s, was a meat grinder with those eight teams. But the only kind of surprise, and we'll get to the other games last night with Sherrard and Riverdale and Orion finishing with a win over Kewaunee, for me, is the ebb and flow of following Kewaunee and not, you know, they're kind of the wild card from year to year where they go from really good to,
right.
I'm just shocked what the results for them this year. Were you surprised at their outcomes at all this? Because some of their scores and how big their enrollment is, you just think, wow, man.
Well, and they've been pretty good the last 2 years, but like you said, the way it ebbs and flows for them, and we talked about this last week, where they could win like six games next year, and I would not be surprised at all, because that just is how it goes. But they were extremely young, and I know they were dealing with some injuries throughout the season. I guess I wasn't sure going into the year how young they were going to be. I mean, they played like almost exclusively sophomores, it felt like. Like all of their key guys were that age, and it just is so hard to compete consistently for 9 weeks when you're playing that many young kid. So but do want to say Coach Lucas, fantastic work with him this season and year number one for him leading the Golden Eagles. You know, disappointing win loss wise, but I think that they do have some nice pieces to build around going into the 2026 season. Crazy we're already saying that. Before we get to recapping Sherrard and Riverdale, we had another listener check in. Dustin Murray driving the Mercer County cross country bus to the regionals
at Saucy Golf Course.
Good luck, yeah. Golden Eagles. Good.
Yeah, that's right.
So Sherrard last night wraps up the season with a loss, 34-20. Competitive though, falling by just 14 points. Talking with Eric Hutchins, who was there, you know, basically the difference in the game is Sherrard turned it over three times, and all three times Riverdale scored. So that's 21 points
in
a 14-point loss. But Sherrard, it just feels like a season of what if for them. They finished 2-7, but with all the injuries and sicknesses, I think they very easily could have won five games this season if all of that weird stuff. They have to forfeit the game against Princeton. Carter Brown gets hurt in the first quarter against Mercer County, gets a weird like phantom ejection in week, what was that, four? So then he misses the second half of that game, misses the first three quarters of the next game against Mendota. They're both losses by one possession in the final minute, basically. So just a season of what if, but Sherrard, like Mercer County, a very heavy senior class of 12 or 13 kids that all contributed in one way or the other. And I want to say, too, Dan McGuire, who took over for Sherrard in a challenging spot, took over, I think, officially was hired in June. With the late resignation of Coach Johnson at Sherrard in April of last year, I just think he did a fantastic job with that program, with everything going into the season, with everything that happened during the year. He navigated it so well and had them playing really well down the stretch once they finally got everybody together. So I know like his future kind of uncertain just because it was the first time he coached in 25 years, and you just don't know if he's going to come back again next year, but I loved working with him. He's a great guy, and I thought did a great job with that team this year.
Well, and especially for a transition like that, where they made the change, you know, basically just, what, a couple months before the season started, where he takes over. And I know initially it was interesting, you know, his demeanor, it's like on the air, it takes a while to get accustomed
right.
to accustomed to him, because I'm like, wow, is this, you know, not one of those fiery guys when he gets on the air. But I respected the results of what he was doing this year, and then just kind of hearing feedback from, you know, some of the community about the job he did. And a guy that hasn't coached for, what was it, 25 years. Yeah. And you say about the what-ifs for Sherrard football. I don't know. That they're the most unluckiest program, that sport specifically, where they either get a key injury or they've never had, to me, in the last 8 years, the schedule is, or whatever, last 10 years, the schedule has never been on their side, because they've always started with who are the best teams in the area. Boom, 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 yeah. boom. They get they get them right in the first 3 weeks, the first 4 weeks of the season. Where some of those seasons, I think, if they get that, if the schedule is backloaded and they get less of the challenges of the really good teams not having those early in the season, maybe those results would be a little bit different. They just, you know, maybe the last 15 years, it just doesn't seem they get any break with whatever, with, like I said, an injury or scheduling or whatever, something weird happens, or like the phantom ejection call you said too, right. which impacted
two their games. Season.
But they were close. You know, they were close to winning five games this year, and I know numbers are going to be an issue with them. I think they feel good about, is it the incoming freshman class next year should be pretty decent. But again, you know, the continuity of probably having, that's undetermined, but I don't know if it's a long-term solution for Coach McGuire or what the situation is next year. But the one thing I'll say about Sherrard, and I saw it this week, I was at a volleyball match over there, that community is going to get on board.
Yep.
And that's why I...
They had a fantastic crowd when we went over there with Mercer County.
And that's why I so hope their football program can get on track. Just like, you know, in the 90s, I think back when they were just like must-see and everything, and that community was there, and it was just, that was the place to kind of be in the area, and I hope they can get that back someday.
And it feels like in every other sport they are very good. You know, it just, for whatever reason, they just can't get the momentum in football. The baseball program very good with Coach Basala. The boys basketball program has been fantastic the last few years, but with Coach Johnson taking over and getting that thing rolling. So, and then, you know, the girls sports, they're always good and everything, it feels like, over there too. So yeah, I agree. I just think that it's hard. Football is so hard to turn around because of, you know, just the limited chances to win games. And like Sherrard, they've been fighting the numbers for, you know, 5 or 6 years now, it feels like, in the football program specifically. But did want to make sure that we mentioned that Coach McGuire, awesome to work with, and really happy that he got to get those two wins to close season. Carter Brown, one of the best players probably ever to play football at Sherrard, especially in recent history, was the first All-Stater last year in like 15 years for them. In Class 3, I know he dealt with some injuries and then had the weird ejection against Hall that kept him out of basically five quarters in the middle of the season, too. But he's been a fantastic kid to cover, and he's not done, of course. He plays basketball and baseball for Sherrard, too. But a great player. It was a joy to watch him play football for the Tigers.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate he didn't get to play a 10th week.
I know.
Because he deserved some of that.
His sophomore year, they should have. That was the year they went 3-6 and I think lost three games by like 6 points or less. And had Rock Ridge on the ropes that year.
That was
led them with 2 minutes left, but lost.
And that was a week 4 or week 5 mm-hmm. game. And that's why I'm saying those type of situations where they were so close to, I mean, that would have been kind of a measuring stick game for them to get a win that would change the whole complexion of their season. But yeah, nice going to those kids at Sherrard and having a big senior class like that. So hats off to Coach McGuire and the kids over there.
Orion gets a win. They snap a 5-game losing streak last night, 63-24 over Kewaunee. Last game for Cale Filler, last game for Owen Voorhees. I think I talked about this with Coach Filler last week. You know, his future kind of up in the air, I think, too, over there. So you don't know if he'll be back. But he's another guy who's been, you know, great to work with from our end, just in terms helping us with anything we could possibly need.
Can I tell the story about how we got Orion on the air? I called him up one summer. I told John Hoshide, I said, you know, we should think about, if we have the broadcasters, try and bring Orion in the loop. So he said, okay. And I called Coach Filler up. I said, hey, what do you think about us doing Orion every week? And he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, how can I help? And he immediately starts doing the work for us, bringing us some sponsors for the game. So I love him. He's the easiest guy to work with. He wants to promote his program. Now, I'm not in that school district every day. I don't know what goes on. You know, there's always interesting dynamics. But from a standpoint of working with somebody that wants their product on the air to promote what? The kids.
Right.
He always did that. And to me, it was because of him that we have them on the air every Friday night. He's the one that really led us to get Orion on the air. And this is the other thing about it. He's great with everyone, like all of our broadcasters. And I know Kyle was doing the game last night. The first 2 years we did Orion, I would do those games. And he was always great to work with. Because I'd always love if you're familiar with the press box areas, the Orion, the wooden steps coming up.
You know when it's coming up.
Shuffling up after a win or after a loss.
And
he never
didn't talk to you.
Oh,
no matter what's going on, no matter what happened the week, he's always like, "Yep, I'll be there, and I'll talk about anything you ask me about." Because there's always, you know, as we know, there's been some stuff that's gone on with him, and you know, he always will say before we start recording, he's like, "I know you got a job to do." That's what he always says.
Well, and that's to you know, maybe the detriment of us a little bit is that's sometimes we have to take ownership of putting the coaches on the air after a hotly contested game when there's still adrenaline and there's still maybe not enough cooling off time where something can be said and maybe misconstrued or whatever. It's an emotional game you're playing for 48 minutes on a Friday night. But yeah, I like I said, I've always appreciated the relationship he's had with the station. Cause I tell everybody I'll never be smart enough to realize who these good coaches and who bad coaches are. Because it's so subjective, I base them on you're going to work with me when we're broadcasting games. That's what I care about. I'll let everybody else figure what the definition of good versus bad is, I guess.
And I'm very happy for him personally. He got to go through the 4 years with Cale playing quarterback, who had a fantastic career at Orion. So Chargers, as we said, win at 63-24 over Kewaunee. Other two games in the conference before we get to our conversation with Steve Soucy this morning. Princeton shuts out Erie Provincetown 48-0. Those teams both 6-3. Monmouth Roseville, big win, bounce back win over Newman.
What happened?
40-7 last night. 40-7, Titans win it.
Because I really thought after last Friday night, credit Coach Adolphson and credit his kids for coming back. I really thought Newman was the favorite going into that game last night.
Yeah, I picked Monmouth Roseville in our weekly picks with the guys from View from the West, but I thought it was going to be one of those like really tight games. But as that score kind of progressed throughout the night last night following that game, I just couldn't believe they were pulling away the way they were. They did to Newman basically what Rock Ridge did to them the previous week. So nice win for the Titans last night to get to 8-1. They'll be in the 3A playoffs. Newman 7-2 will be in 2A most likely. Erie Provincetown and Riverdale both in the 2A field likely, along with Rock Ridge, and then Monmouth Roseville and Princeton in 3A. So teams in the conference going to the postseason.
What about the Erie Provincetown Princeton margin?
Yeah, that was surprising too. I thought that'd be a really close game.
So how much of an impact then does that have for Monmouth Roseville and Newman, let's say if that was reversed?
Yeah, well, I saw going into last night, I think it was Steve Soucy's projection had Monmouth Roseville, if they were 7-2, which he had them losing that game to Newman. I think they were going to be playing IC Catholic in the first round likely. That's not who you want to play in the first round. So we'll talk about his projections for all of the track teams coming up when we get him on the air here in the next 5 minutes or so. But his projection for Rock Ridge is Illini West, and that's consistent with Kyle Campmeyer at NUIC football having Rock Ridge hosting Illini West in the first round next weekend. Again, we'll know officially tonight in the 8 p.m. hour as part of the WRMJ Pigskin Playoff Preview Show. Hopefully you can tune in with us.
Well, and that was a kind of a close game with Illini West and Elmwood Brimfield last night for Illini West. I think was it a 4-point difference at halftime? I think it was 20-16. Illini West led at halftime and kind of pulled away in the second half. Newman will probably be 2A or will they be 1A?
They'll be 2A, it looks like.
So they'll be in the north half of the 2A bracket. The only other thing I wanted to mention last night, and you brought it up this morning, that I think is kind of fascinating. I always like hearing these like tidbits of information. You were the naming rights for the University of Illinois Memorial Stadium. is Geese Memorial Stadium, named after.
And so is their business school.
And he's, what's his first name again?
I don't remember
his
first
name. Is it Larry?
Name.
But he's a Mendota grad, and he donated.
Larry Geese.
And he donated all the money for the improvements at Mendota.
I don't know if that's the case, but I do know he's from Mendota.
Crazy. So
I think that's kind of like the assumption, because that is a beautiful, that is just like pure speculation. That might not be true.
What a connection, though.
But yeah, man. He's a Mendota grad. He's from Mendota. Yeah, Larry Geese, yeah.
So when you think about Geese Memorial Stadium, when you're rooting on the Illini in your seats, think about Mendota Trojans, yeah, and driving 2 hours to a game on
Friday night. And then when you're watching the Illini, I think about the Prophetstown Prophets and the Erie Prophetstown Panthers with Brett Bielema. And think about the Hall Red Devils with Mac Rosetich and the Rockridge Rockets with Cole Rusk. It's the Three Rivers Athletic Conference All-Stars with the Illini football program.
Love it. Yep. All right. Well, Steve Soucy covers a lot of ground here coming up. And then I want to make sure for a second week I get to the 2A top 10 scoreboard. I'll do that at the end.
Okay, great. Well, we'll talk a little more at the conclusion of our program about, you know, what's coming up. Again, our pick and playoff preview show tonight at 7 o'clock when we get underway. The brackets come out in the 8 p.m. hour. We'll talk with every advancing Three Rivers coach. We'll speak with Rockridge's opponent, hopefully, and I've reached out to Toby Vallis at Farmington to hopefully get him on the air, as they'll be 9-0 in the 2A North as well, the Farmington Farmers. So, all that to say, it's going to be a busy day on the WRMJ airwaves on our favorite day of the high school sports calendar, right, is the Saturday of the playoff bracket reveal, as we now turn our focus to the 256 teams who are still alive for high school football.
Yeah, can I say... can I mention someone's name, and may he rest in peace, one of the greatest listeners we ever had. What was such a big day for him, where he'd always come here with his hand-scribbled
chicken scratch
brackets, knocking on the
door
to get in.
He's the only guy who's a bigger expert than Steve Soucy.
Yeah. It's the late, great Terry Buehler. I think about him often, man, and especially on a day like today. And he would always say what, Ty?
Arthur A. Lovington.
But he would always say they're awfully, awfully,
awfully good. Yeah, that's what he'd be saying about Wilmington. Oh, they're awfully, awfully good.
Yeah, by the way, too, I love Coach Graves. I said, what hat is he wearing last night? He had a Carhartt gray stocking cap on last night. I love that model. Nice. I'm thinking I'm going to get one of
those. Well, I like he also wears the Titleist, white Titleist with the maroon lettering, because he's a golf dad, right?
Yeah, yep.
So, all right, well, let's hear what Steve Soucy's got to say. That's what everybody's tuned in for anyway. We'll talk all things IHSA playoff bracket projections. We are less now than 12 hours away from the real thing being revealed tonight. We'll take a break, come back, and chat with Friday Night Drive Steve Soucy. That's next on Sportsline from inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown
Olympia. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Now at 6140 Run, your feet are about to get faster. Check out the brand new Ghost 17s by Brooks, engineered for smooth rides and soft landings. Or lace up the all-new Clifton 10s by Hoka. Lightweight, responsive, made to move. What max cushion? Step into the plush comfort of the Bondi 9s from Hoka. They're like clouds for your feet. Whether you're chasing miles or just chasing comfort, find your fit at 6140 Run. Now open at 185 West Main Street in Galesburg.
And this is Ty Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Sportsline continues from inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito. Jim Taylor alongside. We're joined by a special guest this morning, our man Steve Soucy from Friday Night Drive, as we are to playoff field and playoff bracket reveal day. So Steve Soucy, I guess, as we start, before we get into anything, how are you feeling this morning? Have you been able to get enough sleep, enough energy to get through the day? How's it going, man?
Not too bad. It it's one of those things where I kind of am able to pre-prepare. I kind of anticipate that it's going to be a long night based on the things that I guess in some cases foolishly try to do here. Just to let you behind the curtain a little bit, most weeks I take maybe 8 to 10 hours to throw the projection together. And last night I'm just trying to do it in less than two. So my usual meticulousness is not actually kind of available to me, but I prepare so much before it that I'm kind of anticipating a lot of the things that happen. And a lot of those things did happen last night.
Well, I think for our listening audience, of course, the most interesting bracket is Class 2A. And with the Rockridge Rockets, who finished a regular season at 9-0 last night, projected by you to be the number one seed in the North bracket in Class 2A, their projected opponent would be 16 seed Illini West. So how set is that, you think, today? Is there much that could switch that around?
There isn't really. Basically, what it comes down to is that you've got a couple of teams that are able to get to five wins right now based on Saturday games. And those are really the only two teams that can alter the field. But in the case of those two teams, both of their enrollments are larger. Not really big, but large enough where the 2A field and the 1A field will not be altered, because there's two reasons for that. If one of these 4-4 teams wins or doesn't win today, the replacement for them is going to be a larger school. So it's just going to be a simple swap out in one of the higher classifications. So 1, 2, and 3, as far as who is in the field, I do not believe that those are going to change regardless of what happens on Saturday. Seeds, however, those can move. But actual teams, I don't see that happening.
So do you see then any potential for wiggle room with the split as it relates to North-South?
I do, and because that's something that, you know, the policy is not concrete. They usually stay with the philosophies that they use, but you also have to look at how close geographically some of those teams are to that you know, phantom North-South line that you're doing it. And I would say 90% of the time, the IHSA takes that as strict law. But then if you look at the content of who is where in each of the individual classifications, sometimes you might find a slightly northern team that has a lot of teams in that bracket that are closer to them geographically to maybe a team that is, you know, slightly south, slightly more south than that team, that doesn't have as many teams in the bracket, and we're talking about a minor split. You might see them switch those teams because it creates a little bit more geographic equity in that first round. It doesn't happen all the time, and I would say it almost doesn't happen that much to where we even talk about it, but it has happened enough where we have to keep that as a possibility.
So do you see, Steve, then, like in the 2A bracket, who would be maybe a couple of those schools that would be on this, what we call North-South line that we potentially talk about that could move a little bit? Are there any couple of schools that stand out that could impact that, I guess?
You know, you have to look at some of those schools that play in the Vermilion Valley. Westville, Bismarck, Henning are a couple of schools that are just kind of right around, seemingly around that line every single year. And, you know, when it comes down to it, oh my goodness, my dogs are going crazy. Sorry, guys.
No problem.
Yeah. So, you know, you just kind of look at those types of schools, and those are the ones that, like, they always seem to be on that north-south bubble. And it's definitely becoming a situation where you kind of have to forecast it. But then if you go past history, they usually don't move them. So the geography line is something that they hold to almost all the time, but have made changes just enough that you have to be able to that you have to be able to take everything into account. So yeah, so then you're basically looking at that, and it's just, you know, it's one of those things that you can't really predict that they might make a change, but you have to at least access the possibility that it may happen.
Yeah, so you mentioned Westville, one of those teams that maybe is on that line, who finished the regular season 9-0 and has been ranked, I think, within the top five from the AP and 2A for most of the season. Right now, Rock Ridge played them in the first round in the North bracket a couple of seasons ago. So for them, I know, like you said, they're maybe the top team that is maybe a little bit on the bubble going north or south. You have them in the south right now. Does that feel, I mean, pretty confident with that, or do you think there's a chance they get shifted north specifically?
You know, I think I'm relatively confident of that, because, you know, you just kind of look at it, and if you did make a move with it, there would have to be a good reason for that. And I don't know if I see it. I think I see enough teams on the western portion of the state, enough teams on the eastern portion of the state where it looks like it's balanced. And then your tiebreaker is, who's true north? I mean, of those two schools, and it might be a tiny little minor line, but that's usually when it looks like there's that geographic balance there that they're trying to kind of look for. The smaller classifications are obviously more difficult to decipher where that line is, because they're a little bit more spread out in 2 and 1A specifically than they are in all the other classes, because usually you kind of look at it and say, okay, 16, there we go. I mean, it's usually somewhat clear. You might have to split a hair here or there, but the smaller classifications, sometimes you get into these situations where you look on the map and the difference between who is most north, who is more south, is extremely close.
Well, and looking at your projection too, which all this is available on Friday Night Drive via Shaw Local, and I think, Steve, you know, the thing we've talked about and maybe followed all season long, and it feels like every year it's this way when you talk about 2A, 3A, is where is Wilmington going to fall? I think there were points where it looked like they were going to be 3A. It's looked as the season has progressed, they've been trending more towards 2A. You have them in the 2A North as the 5 seed at 8-1. I know they beat Coal City last night playing West Hancock. So safe to say Wilmington will be back in the 2A field this year, you think?
You know, I think that is pretty safe. I mean, what it really comes down to is that, you know, when you're looking at shaping the back end of this field, you're looking at, you know, the 4-4s that were in action last night, and whether or not they could beat a team with a better record than them, or you had a 4-4 that lost to a team that had a worse record than 4-4. Because while those games, you can't just go on record in week 9, obviously, that is a pretty good benchmark for the 4-4 teams. So in order for a lot of movement to happen in the smaller classes, what we had to have is, I mean, it may not be, like I said, an upset in record, but you need to have a lot of those things happen to start moving lines around. And in reality, we got one really early on record last night with Knoxville and Stark County, and then they just stopped coming. They did not happen. And then in a reverse move, what you need to watch for is those 4-4 teams that lose to teams with worse records, and we got a slower trickle of those. Because I entered last night and heading into that final night believing that it was going to be 3 teams that we were going to need to fill the field with 4 wins. It ended up being 5. So that's where we're at right now. I believe 5 4-5 teams are going to be needed to get into the field. And also on top of that, the 4-5 teams tend to come from the larger classifications. So what you saw was you didn't see teams moving around very much, especially in the smaller classifications, because we did not have a lot of teams that kind of punched their way into the field last night, if you would. I mean, I was, to be honest with you, surprised when it comes right down to it, because I'm used to there being quite a bit more move. and there really wasn't. I mean, there were a couple teams that shifted classes, but as far as teams that I did not have in heading into the, you know, the final night, that list was really short, and that was what made it the week nine is always eventful, but it made it a little bit less eventful than I expected it to be, because we just did not have a lot of teams kind of rise up with that big surprise win that kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, if you were looking at it, I didn't project it this way, but you could easily kind of predict that that Knoxville win was coming last night, just kind of based on the way those two teams were playing heading into that game. Sometimes I make those calls where it's an under record, just that because I think it's a better team. I kind of went with Stark County winning that game, even though I was not confident about it. I think a couple people did ask me about it. What's the game on the board that you're least confident about what you had projected? And I believe I told them I was not confident about Stark County and Knoxville. So, but that's just kind of what you have to do. You've got to project, you know, over 250 games, and you're going to miss some. So that's the reality was I missed that one. But that was one that I think if you wanted to, you could have easily kind of projected that coming. And I did correctly project a couple of those other ones. St. Rita with a win over a team with a better record, I did project that. But yeah, so that was what it really kind of came down to.
And I guess getting back to the North and the South bracket, 1A, 2A, and I realize everyone listening, 99% of the people out there say, well, the 1 through 32 bracket, that's the way we should do it. I get that. But I do like the subjectivity of kind of the North-South split, because when you talk about Westville this year, that's a pretty significant, you know, situation where you have a 9-0 team that could go north, maybe, which would impact that top half of the bracket. Or like you say, you have them in the south with their position there. That's what I kind of like still about the two halves of the brackets, where there is some wiggle room, I guess, to determine. And I get it again, 1 through 32, everyone wants it. But do you like that little bit, you know, the kind of unknown or something, a wild card like that could impact the bracket?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's driving me a little bit nuts about this year's bracket situation in terms of not having a 1 to 32. There are two teams right now that have the exact same enrollment that are sitting on the bubble between two classes right now at this moment. So what happens essentially when they decide, well, who goes to the smaller classification, who goes to the bigger classification, that's a coin flip. So, and the problem that is developing with these particular two teams is one of them is distinctly south. One of them is distinctly north. So when I'm doing what I do, if I project the coin flip wrong, every one of those brackets, because of the north-south situation here, is altered dramatically. So right now, when I look at the projections that I have for 3 and 4A, because of that north-south component, if I guess the coin flip incorrectly, 3 and 4 brackets are essentially glorified garbage. Because it's, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Because if I mean, basically what I do in that situation, when I have a coin flip situation, I simply put them in alphabetical order, because who knows? I'm not going to sit here and flip a nickel and go, okay, that's my predicted nickel flip, you know? So that's what I do in that situation. So in the projections that are currently out, I have Benton in class 3A, a clear South team, Chicago South Shore, a clear North team in 4A. So if the coin flip comes out today and I'm wrong about that and it goes the other way, then every single one of those brackets changes, because you have to insert Benton in the 4A South bracket, remove a team that's in the South bracket, move them to the North to take the spot that South Shore still had, and all those seeds have to be rejiggered. So the North-South bracket, from a technical standpoint, can cause some problems. And that's one of the problems that sometimes can be materialized.
Well, when you look back at this 2A bracket, and again, you know, you said not really a whole lot of wiggle room, it feels like, with some of the seeds and everything. So Riverdale, who's a school that's in our coverage area, seeded 13th in your projection, playing at Seneca. We mentioned Rock Ridge projected to be the number one seed against 16th seed Illini West. Also in there includes Erie Prophetstown, Aurora Christian, that's 11 versus 6. Then Newman Central Catholic, who's got to be on the 1A, 2A bubble all season, projected 7th at home against 10th seeded Ridgeview Lexington. So when you look at the 2A seeds, again, just to reiterate, any chance for any of these teams to move up or down like a seed line? Maybe we said that we think the, you know, the teams are set in terms of the classifications, the lower levels, but what about the seedings for those schools?
You know, when you look at it right now, like I said last night, I was trying to do a projection that usually takes me 10 hours and do it in two. What that ultimately means is that this morning, you know, when I finally get a little bit more conscious here, I will look at all of the potential tiebreaker situations. I don't look at those as extremely carefully. However, in the smaller classifications, there are not as many of those scenarios because unlike the larger classifications, there are not a lot of Saturday games that affect those fields. So those points are pretty much those points. So basically what I will do this morning is I will go back and I will confirm all of those points and make sure that I have the right numbers. It's one of those little nuances of the situation. When you look at, you know, for example, when you're looking at 2A, there aren't a lot of situations where teams are tied on a point line. There are a few, and then you just kind of have to look at it and figure out, you know, the secondary tiebreakers, see if there's a way to split them, see if there's not, because there are some situations where there are not. Basically, it comes down to, I mean, there's another situation in 5A where two undefeated teams both come from closed conferences, so their second stage tiebreaker is the same. Their playoff points are the same because they play in a closed conference. So that basically the 1 and 2 seed in 5A North is going to be decided by a random number generator because there's no other way on the books to break the tie. So those are the kinds of things that I will look at this morning. But like I said before, in 2A, there's not a lot of those point distinctions. I mean, you've got Rock Ridge, who is clearly going to be the number one seed on the north side of the bracket, even though there are four teams that are going to be undefeated on the north side of the bracket. And that's another thing that's very interesting about 2A in general. There are, I believe, 26 teams that are going to get through the regular season undefeated. 7 of them are in the 2A bracket.
Wow.
So that's one of the things that kind of stands out on paper about the 2A bracket. You've got a lot of brackets around the state where, you know, maybe a 6-3 team is going to get a home game in the first round with a lot of playoff points. No, that's not going to happen in 2A because it is chock full of 9-0 teams and even a healthy amount of 8-1 teams in the South. So it's a very deep bracket in terms of quality records. Now, some of these schools that have these quality records, I question their schedule a little bit, but I mean, because we just kind of look at their playoff point total, and it's not very high, but win-loss, it's a very impressive bracket.
Well, 3A, as we look at that field, a couple of schools in our coverage area in the Three Rivers Athletic Conference include Monmouth-Roseville, who beat Newman last night to get 8-1. You have them projected to play at home against 12-seed Hersher. Then Princeton, seeded 14th in 3A in your latest projection, playing number 3-seed Bloomington Central Catholic. So as you look at that 3A field, kind of the same thing we were talking about, 2A, how set does that feel? I know you mentioned, obviously, there's the coin flip thing that could throw everything for a loop. But then I guess the follow-up to that, too, kind of a two-parter, Bloomington Central Catholic, are they for sure going to be north, you think, or what's the potential they go south?
Well, that's one of those situations that we're talking about with that coin flip with Benton and South Shore, because Bloomington Central Catholic is officially the pivot team in 3A, 4A. So if that coin flip comes down and they say, okay, South Shore's in 3A, Benton is in 4, well, then I got to go back and, you know, and do some editing there because, you know, Benton would be moving up to 4. That would create a vacancy in the South bracket, which would be filled by Bloomington Central Catholic. So South Shore could go. So there's definitely a possibility that Bloomington Central Catholic could not be in this 3A field. they could be, in the 3A North. They could move back down to the 3A South. And then there, like I mentioned before, there are some tiebreaker issues, one of them that involves Princeton going along with Hersher and Mantino. So you could see a shuffle in the 12 to 14 seeds in that group just because of I haven't had the opportunity to go and look at second stage tiebreakers with those teams because of this pesky thing called sleep. So that's basically what it comes down to. So you could easily see, you could see Bloomington Central Catholic removed from that bracket. You could see Princeton move up as many as actually looking at it right now. If Bloomington Central Catholic move, Princeton could actually move as much as three seeds. That's one of the unique situations there because they could potentially leapfrog both Hersher and Piatone. And if South Shore had to end up going into that North bracket, South Shore would go underneath Princeton, provided that they lose their game today, which I think they will.
So going to be interesting that with this coin toss. And logistically, I'm thinking, what time does that happen at then? Do they do that like 7 o'clock? Or what is the protocol for that? I'm curious.
I have saw this process go down about a decade ago when I was preparing to go on television for the playoff pairing show. And Matt Troha, assistant executive director, was like, "Hey, Seuss, come here, you might want to see this." So he pulls me into this room and they're listening to a conference call where they have representatives from both schools and they're walking through the process of what is happening and why they're doing this. And I cannot remember the two schools. I probably should have looked this up because this question has come up a lot over the last week or two. And they had one of the schools call it, and then the other school, was there listening to the process. Exciting listening to a coin flip. But that was how they determined who went to, I believe it was a difference between 1 and 2A at the time. One went to 1, one went to 2, and whoever won the coin flip went to the smaller classification. That happened in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday because they don't do it until they have to do it. So if these numbers all play out, and right now I don't really have any reason to believe that they won't, there will be recognition that, hey, wait a minute, we have to break this tie between 3 and 4A, and they will do that some point this afternoon. So I've been arguing since the situation materializes that we should do it beforehand so we know. Like it should be documented, but that argument has fallen on deaf ears.
Well, speaking generally about this bracket, I know something that got so much talk last year, of course, was how the state championship games went with all of the private school success. There's now a new multiplier protocol in the state for private schools with the 1-year enrollment cycle and some changes to that. So when you look at this projected bracket, I think in 1A, as I look quickly through your projection, the only private school that sticks out to me is Ottawa Marquette. In 2A, we mentioned Newman Central Catholic likely to be in the 2A field. But outside of that, it looks like for the most part, the smaller classifications are public schools as it looks. So is that what you maybe expected out of this new system this year, what we projected to have tonight?
Well, I think there's kind of a twofold effect to what happened here. When the enrollment numbers came out with many more schools being multiplied this year than have been in previous seasons, the first thing that I thought to myself was, okay, there's going to be a lot of those schools moving up several classes. I didn't really think about what the cross effect was, which was there are a lot of non-private schools that are playing in classifications this year that are lower than what you are used to. And it took me a while to get my head wrapped around that. When you would look at, you'd look at some schools that you're like, oh yeah, that's usually a 5A school or that's usually a 3A school. And it didn't happen as much at the smaller classifications, but in those middle classifications, it was like, hold on a minute. These are schools that you're like, year on year, you're like, okay, that maybe they're a bubble team, but they usually end up in the higher classification of the two. And, maybe 1 year out of five, they slip into that lower classification. Some of these schools were not even, they weren't even close to the line anymore. They were in the lower classification. So that's the one thing that we had to wrap our heads around. But that doesn't happen as much in the smaller classification. But you did see, like, for example, and I mean, these teams didn't ultimately make the field, but you have to think about it in that construct. Your defending 1A state champion didn't make the field, but had they made the field, they would be in 4A. Your defending 2A state champion did not make the field, but if they would have made the field, they would have been in the 3A field. The 3A champion is Montini. They're moving up to 4A. The 4A champion, DePaul Prep, didn't make the field, but if they would have, they would have gone all the way up to 7. So, I mean, if you just kind of look at those teams, like every one of those teams that last year, the outcry was there for, you know, they're not in the right classification. Well, they didn't make the field this year, but if they would have made the field, they would have been nowhere near where they were last year. So I think overall, I think the rule change worked as intended. So that was a good thing in general to at least decrease that. I still think we're going to get a lot of private school representation in championship games, but I think for most people's tastes, those games are going to be more representative of where those schools should be.
So Aurora Christian also is a team that I forgot to mention that looks like they'll be in the 2A field as well. So I guess as we start to wind down with you this morning, Steve Soucy, again, very appreciative of the time you give us from Friday Night Drive on a busy weekend and a busy season for you. Again, though, just to reiterate to our listeners that the smaller classifications, 1A and 2A, feels decently set where the teams in the fields that are projected right now should be the 32 teams in each of those classifications. Is that right?
Yeah, it should be. And I mean, I still haven't done what I do as a safety precaution, as I go back through and look and make sure that every single score last night that we received was the correct one and the one that the IHSA has. I have not gone through that process yet. There have been instances where there has been a bad score out there that it was floating around on Friday night and then affects the situation. I mean, right now, if that were to happen and it was maybe creating an open spot. But I mean, I'll be honest with you, there are so many people that are interested in this process. And last night, I mean, walking through it, you know, on our live stream, you know, we had hundreds of people over the course of the night that were in there, you know, when we were talking about what scores we were missing, people were finding them for us. And if we had a bad one, and there was one instance where that, like, somebody had reported a bad one, everybody else, there were several other people that were like, wait, that's not right. So I think the odds of the days of, you know, kind of scrambling to find some of these scores and not being really able to find one, I think those are pretty much gone. I mean, I think people are, you know, really, really astute about how to find these scores, and people are just doing a better job of reporting, like, what's going on with, like, what those situations are. So so it's been very interesting. And you're just kind of looking at it all from that situation. And, you know, like I said, I am pretty confident. I'm never 100% confident this early on Saturday morning that what I have is everything, that the way that it goes. But right now I feel pretty good about it, just because, I mean, I was going back through and looking at the last couple of teams in, especially with those 4-win teams, and trying to figure out those points. It's just, it's a careful situation. So, but yeah, I think the 256 that I have, barring those Saturday results changing it, I feel pretty confident that I have the right 256 as of this moment. But obviously there's that Saturday variable that can not only pick off maybe one of these teams getting into the field, maybe changing that around on the back end. There's also some seed things. There are definitely some, and a lot of those involve Chicago Public League teams, because a large chunk of the teams that are involved are Chicago Public League teams.
And real quick, before we let you go, now we're not going to dive too deep into this because we want to let Steve Soucy get back to his work. But the talk of the state really the past week or two has been this proposal put out by the Roxana administration down in the southern portion of the state. Now, we had Adam Miller and Mark Briggs on from Roxana earlier this week, so we're not going to go over, you know, in depth what this proposal is. If you want to find out about that, you can read Steve Soucy's work at Friday Night Drive. You can listen to our conversation with them. In the simplest terms, it would regionalize scheduling in the state and expand the playoffs from 256 to 384 qualifiers, so from 32 to 48 in each classification. If this is approved by the IHSA membership, it would go into effect next year. So I guess the question I have for you, Steve Soucy, is from your work, you know, talking with people statewide at this point. Now, I know there's a process ahead, but how likely do you think this thing is to pass?
You know, I think it's one of those things that, you know, I'm reluctant to put a percentage on it. I will say, and I think you probably, I did listen to your conversation with those guys. I've been talking with them through this entire process, to be honest with you. So they've asked my opinions about this, wanting to know what I think their potential problems would be. So I won't say involved in the process, but I will say that I've been, consulting a little bit. So basically for me, you know, I think it's really hard for a lot of people to embrace the notion of changing this. Some people just are staunch, I do not want the playoffs expanded. Some people think we have too many teams in the playoffs now. So getting over that hurdle, I think, is the biggest challenge something like this faces. I will say, just on a thoroughness basis and a this kind of makes sense basis, I think this may be the best one we've ever seen in terms of proposals that, you know, have everything laid out for you. You may not agree with it, but explainers talking about how this works, why it's needed. I think they've done a great job of being transparent about what they're asking for here and why they think that it's necessary. You may not agree with that, but they have touched all their potential bases, is what I believe. So that's definitely a situation that I look at, you know, with that. I think, honestly, I'm really not sure. If you ask me, you know, bet on it, let's have a fun bet, I would say it's not going to pass. I think it's one of those situations where I think there's a lot of traditionalists in the state that believe, hey, you should have to qualify, you should have to do this. But I also, in fairness, I would not also be shocked if it did, because I also think there are a lot of people out there that are frustrated with various elements of the current system and are ready for some sort of change, even if it ends up not being the best change. I don't really want it to pass, because I love this system, even though it causes me to have no sleep for about a month. if basically it is stated at some point in time we're going to have change, I would support a proposal like this if we finally said, hey, we need to change this, because like I said, I think it is thoughtful, I think it is thorough, and it would not be something that would be taken on lightly with like, oh, let's just change to change. I think this, like I said, I think this proposal is very well thought out. It's very, it addresses a lot of the things. I don't know if it addresses them all, and I don't think anything does. I think there are problems in the current system that I would like to see addressed, but that's a discussion for a later day and a longer period of time, because it's many layered. But I think it'll pass? I think it'll be close, but I think in the end it probably will not.
And I guess the only thing for you, and you kind of hit on it, is for me, a couple of coaches I talked to just like yesterday, the immediate no is because of the playoff expansion. But right, they like the regional scheduling. Here's my only other issue that with football bylaw amendments and proposals. Because I envision if this does pass, within the next 2 years, there'll be another bylaw amendment to change it. So my frustration in the whole process is these proposals that come every year or every other year just never stop. And to me, I almost think there should be a bylaw amendment proposal. If there's a football playoff proposal that gets on the ballot through this legislative process, it should be once, like only every 5 years, because it's just nonstop. We get these proposals we have to talk about, and there's just no end to it.
To their credit, they did not make the mistake that the previous proposals did, the one that did get through. If this does pass, it will be in play for the 2026 season. There will not be an opportunity for another voting situation to try to repeal it. So it will be tried for minimum 1 year if it does pass, because that's the way it's written. There will not be another opportunity to essentially vote out an accepted proposal. Now, there's nothing to stop someone from going through it for a year and then saying, this was terrible, we need to go back in the 2027 ballot. But if this passes through the legislative process, it will go into effect for the 2026 season. There is no way to take it off the table after it goes through the voting process and if it is voted in. It is written into the proposal that it would start for the 2026 season. So if it passes, it is going for 2026. It might only last a year, but it is going for 2026.
All right, and just very last thing for Steve Soucy, as we're running out of time with him this morning on Sportsline. General question, and it's something that, as we've talked about so far today, it's something that most people, maybe everybody that I talk to about the IHSA football playoffs, is a vast majority of people that you hear from want the 1 through 32 seeding. So is there any way we ever get back to that, do you think? Or how do we go about having that happen? Do you think there's a possibility ever?
You know, I think in a roundabout way, I think, yes, it is possible. And interestingly enough, you know, I've talked to the Roxana guys about this, and they're really open to feedback, and they can make changes to their proposal. So, I mean, I think that, you know, maybe if they get enough feedback that says, hey, while we're at it, let's do that too, I think they might be open to that. So, but I do think at some point maybe we get back to it. I don't think it's going to happen right now.
All right. Well, we are very appreciative of the time that Friday Night Drive Steve Soucy gave us this morning on the WRMJ Sportsline program. Third straight year that the great Steve Soucy has joined us on the Saturday morning of the playoff bracket reveal. Sir, I really appreciate the time for getting up early. I know, like I said, I was watching your live stream late last night via Friday Night Drive, and you get up to talk with us early this morning. So really appreciate the time, man. Thanks a lot for joining us again this year.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, I'm Ty Taylor on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Now at 6140RUN, your feet are about to get faster. Check out the brand new Ghost 17s by Brooks, engineered for smooth rides and soft landings. Or lace up the all-new Clifton 10s by Hoka. Lightweight, responsive, made to move. What max cushion? Step into the plush comfort of the Bondi 9s from Hoka. They're like clouds for your feet. Whether you're chasing miles or just chasing comfort, find your fit at 6140RUN. Now open at 185 West Main Street in Galesburg.
Back inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Aledo as we are starting to wrap up Sportsline on Saturday morning. We will be back in these very same studios tonight for the WRMJ Pigskin Playoff Preview Show. Exciting day on the IHSA sports calendar, Jim Taylor.
We're going to get Benny. Wake up, Sean Harkey. We're going to get Benny's pizza.
Get ready, Harkey. We're coming, buddy.
Yeah, always an exciting time of the year. I just remember how kind of started so organically here when we started doing these. We started doing the show, I think, long before most broadcast entities. And I remember the 1 year when they released the pairings, John Hoshite's brother was actually in Bloomington. This would have been like the early 90s, calling us back with the pairings. Amazing. And then the IHSA, one of the first, when they embraced technology in the early days, they had like this old modem system that was like, if you watched the 1980s movie War Games, it was like that. And then, of course, they went to, you know, the web technology initially. But then in the early days, when you're still trying to maneuver your way through that technology, you know, they had multiple times where the system would crash and they'd have to, you know, tell people, hey, only mandatory people can get on the website. So it sure has changed. But it is a exciting time of the year. And that, it's the biggest night of the year for the Illinois High School Association because, like I said, 256 schools are specifically interested, and then this great fan base in the state of Illinois that loves to cover high school football too.
Now, I can't wait for tonight, and I can't wait for hopefully the next five weekends covering the Rockridge Rockets, number one ranked team in the state going into the playoffs in Class 2A. They'll be the top seed in the 2A North bracket tonight, again, likely to play Illini West. We'll learn that for sure later tonight. Again, we'll be on the air with the annual WRMJ Pigskin playoff preview at 7 o'clock tonight. But man, a chance to have an early special postseason with a great Rockridge Rocket team.
Yeah, and I think that the great, you know, conversation you had with Steve Soucy today, I think a couple of, you know, headlines that come out of that is with the bracket, you know, Westville, one of the very good teams where you think, well, are they going to go north or south? He has them in the south. They're one of the seven 9-0 2A teams. And then, you know, I think kind of the lead to Wilmington being a 2A team, I think is, you know, one of the big storylines for 2A.
I think they come in as the favorite to win the state championship, in my opinion. They're 8-1. They've won 8 in a row. Their only loss was to Morris, 27-20 in week one. Morris number 2 in 4A, I believe, behind only Montini in the rankings.
Yeah, and then they finish the regular season. I can give you the 2A scoreboard if you want that.
Go right ahead. Not, we need anyway. A sponsor for that. Get on it, Eric.
Everybody's like sick. Everybody's sick. What's he doing? But anyway, Wilmington, they've been ranked 3A all year, but we've been following them. They would have an impressive win last night to finish the regular season 44-21 over the Coal City Kohlers. Of course, Rockridge 48-21 over Hall Township that co-ops with Putnam County last night. El Paso Gridley, they finished the year 9-0, ranked number 2. They beat Reed Custer 28-14. Toby Vallis, you'll hear from him tonight, the head coach of the Fightin' Farmers of Farmington, 48-0 over Bureau Valley. Seneca, the straight T formation, remember, we're still having nightmares about that. 48-13, they win last night over Carlisle. Westville, 52-13 over Iroquois West. They're 9-0. Johnston City down in southern Illinois, they beat the Red Devils of Cesar Valier, 36-18. DuQuoin, 47-20. Also the Red Devils of Murfreesboro, who they went over last night. Monroe Forsyth, now they've been kind of interesting to follow here down the stretch. I saw they trailed last night in the first half, and they were in danger of losing, I think, their last three games of the year because they lost to Olympia, Williamsville, and then last night they trailed the Pretzels of New Berlin out of Sagamon County. They win 44-34. Tri-Valley, this is a team that scares me too, playing in the heart of Illinois Conference.
Potential round two opponent for Rockridge.
They've had some good success, 42-7. They've been a perennial winner in the heart of Illinois Conference, 42-7 over Eureka. And the Pena Panthers, they beat Hillsboro 46-27. They're ranked 10 in 2A. I love tracking down the 2A top 10.
The only team you didn't give their nickname of was DuQuoin. I believe they're the Indians.
Correct.
All right. Now, you mentioned New Berlin, and they were a part of the Riverton shootout field this past year when Rockridge was there. Rockridge played Warrensburg Latham and lost on a buzzer beater. I remember that was a long trip that day. But the first game of the day there, New Berlin was playing. I got there at like halftime or third quarter around of their game, and they had I think they're alternate uniforms they wear that are white with orange lettering in cursive that say Saltyville. Yeah, they're the pretzels. Man. That's an amazing uniform. And I was like, man, those are amazing. I went over and talked to some of the people from there. I'm like, those are the my favorite jerseys I've ever seen. Saltyville.
Yeah, and I know as we talk about fall, and by the way, finally some fall football weather last night. I thought it felt great, that fall nip in the air last night.
Felt good in the press box in Mendota.
Yeah, temperatures in the 40s. And we'll talk about it more tonight, but that's the other thing you look at over the next 5 weeks. There's going to be one or two weather games you have to deal with this time of the year, and you always say, how are we going to respond to that? And I believe the other thing is turf. Now, Tri-Valley, they're natural grass, and that's the other thing you think about some of these schools, what type of playing surfaces they have. We know Westville is artificial turf, so that can always come into play as well. But fall sports, I know cross-country taking place today. We heard the cross-country team, they're heading up to Saukee. And you brought up the interesting point earlier this week that I think is interesting about, you know, kind of these fall sports assignments. So the volleyball postseason begins next week, right? Mercer County is one of the regional hosts. And it's weird for me that I didn't realize. So volleyball's different from like basketball. So the quarterfinal or play-in games normally in those other sports are always played at the higher seed. But that's not the case for volleyball.
It is
so
not.
So Farmington and Canton, are they're playing Monday night here in volleyball?
Farmington versus Canton in high school volleyball Monday night in Aledo.
And that's that preliminary is a quarterfinal game. And then the other thing I thought too, I didn't realize that the admission now at postseason events for volleyball regional, and this isn't Mercer County setting the price, this is the IHSA price, is $8. To me, that's, man.
I just saw a car on South College Avenue drive off the side of the road when you said that. $8. Well, my God.
But it's just when you factor in the whole week, that can be a lot of money if you have a fairly. But I mean, it is what it is with the rising cost. But I think about that too, where you have to travel that distance, your Farmington and Canton,
to come here
and then play because of the postseason.
When you're having a bad year already. Well, and the thing too, and this is like no one's probably listening for this, but the other team, so that's a 5-team regional in Aledo. Here are the teams. We just talked about Farmington, Canton, IVC from Chillicothe, Peoria, Notre Dame, and then Mercer County.
The regional?
Those are the 5 teams, the other 4 teams that are coming here, yeah. Long week for those guys. IVC the top seed. But the other regional side is Monmouth Roseville in that subsection. It's like all those schools. I mean, like Manuel is going to Monmouth Roseville to play in the quarterfinals on Monday. I forget who some of the other teams are. I don't have it in front of me. But it's like Monmouth Roseville, Mirko, and then Rock Ridge is in that subsection too. So I think they're at Monmouth Roseville regional too. But anyway, I guess that's something we can look at as the week progresses. I was thinking about going for. I was wrong though. I thought it was Manuel who was coming here to play Farmington until I looked. I was gonna go and just see the crowd of Farmington versus Manuel in volleyball. I still might stop by the high school Monday night to just see what the crowd's like for that game and then immediately leave. But I that's gonna be hilarious.
Well, yeah, that's why I don't know why that game is not played down there for some reason, and the money goes to where it's supposed to go with these postseason hosts. But yeah, for those two schools that are located 7 miles apart or something like that to come all the way up here to play one game. Is that the only game or are there 2 games?
One
here?
Game.
Oh, wow.
And then I might stop by and steal some of the Casey's pizza in the Mercer County hospitality room.
All right, so back on 7 o'clock tonight with the Pigskin Playoff preview. Monty Smith, he'll be
here.
Studio.
You'll be here. I'll be here. Chip Filler can't be here. He's got grandpa duties with his young infant grandchild. So he might have been able to come. Can't make it, though. So unfortunate he won't be able to hear. But we've got a good trio of experts.
Well, we'll be together for the next 5 weeks, hopefully, right?
Yes. Five weekends. That'll be our broadcast team. Also, I want to mention this because Eric Hutchins made me do this yesterday. He went through this with me because he was talking to me, asked me how glad I am that I'm done doing pregame interviews. And I'm not. I love doing them. But until you picked up covering the Rockets the past couple weeks, I did every pregame interview for all of our broadcasts with the exception of 4 now the past 2 weeks with you doing the Rock Ridge pregame and the opponent the past 2 weeks. So he had me go through and calculate how many pregame interviews I did and how many Saturday morning Sportsline interviews I did centered all around Three Rivers Athletic Conference football. Do you want to guess the number? This made me like rethink some of my life's choices that have brought me to this point.
Well, so let's see. Well, no, because I would do the simple math, but they're with yeah, right. some of our three local teams playing one another.
I just want you to give a guess, and then I want to give you the number.
Oh, man. So I'll just go eight times. What's eight times? I'll go 60. No, there'd be more. I'll go 75.
92. Because it was five sports lines every morning or every Saturday morning, and then some weeks were eight pregame interviews, some weeks were six. The last 2 weeks of the season were four because you were here doing the Rock Ridge ones, but man, that's yeah, a lot of well, content. I told Eric, I'm like, I apparently could do those in my sleep because, man, holy cow. Well, 92.
That's why I said, do you want me to go ahead and do the pregame interviews for the games I'm doing? And you're like, yeah, go ahead and do them.
If you want. I mean, I normally do those on Thursdays and like,
but see, you're
that's my entire day.
But you're figuring it out. Too that it's important that you do those
100%
because people closely listen to the content on this station yeah. and you know that
right
very well and that's what's great about the connection between the broadcaster and the listener. People expect that.
So I want everybody to call me the biggest expert on Three Rivers Conference football. Has anyone else done 92 interviews with only the coaches in this league?
No.
the past 9 weeks?
No.
Oh, and you know what? Actually, it would be more than that. It'd be 96 because I didn't count the preseason preview interviews. 96. But, I almost got to 100.
But wouldn't you agree for me? I think that's really kind of the most important. The most enjoyable part of this job. Like, I tell you, this week, I really enjoy talking to the Hall Township coach.
Yeah,
Nick
I
Sterling.
Like talking to the opposing coaches that we cover. I was telling this to Monty, too. Jim Eustace, Mendota's head coach, we got done, and I was probably on the phone with him for like 30, 45 more minutes on Thursday morning. We were talking about the proposal from Roxana, because Mendota's one of the schools who is like one of the co-sponsors of it that has publicly put their stamp on it. So we were talking about that and just some of the travel that they have to deal with. So that's part of it that's fun is like, you know, when you like work and kind of live in this realm, like a lot of the things that you get to speak about, you know, most average people don't grasp it really. You know what I mean? So it's hard to have like, you know, true conversations. And so that is the part that is fun about doing this for sure is like this week, you know, we've talked about how much we love talking to our local coaches, but like, you know, Coach Eustace, you mentioned Coach Sterling at Hall. I love, you know, talking with the guy Derek's at Riverdale. I'm super, super happy they're going to be in the playoffs too. So yeah, I mean, it's been a fun year. That's for sure.
So one of the funniest things that you bring up, an interesting point about the station. So last night, for whatever reason, the bag, the station bag I have that I take with me has like a bunch of the WRMJ, there's those little stickers, you know what I'm
yes.
talking about?
Yeah.
So I was messing with my equipment during the broadcast and kind of those stickers were on the top of the bag that you could see them. And this guy, he walks by, I noticed, and he's waiting for me to, you know, go to break or whatever. And so I take off my headset and I'm like, he wants what you want something from me? He's like, hey, can I have one of those stickers?
There you go.
So then later, like 10 minutes later, a guy from the other part of the press box walks over. He's like, hey, do you have some, can I get one of those stickers too? I'm like, okay, man. I don't even know who Rando's from Spring Valley Hall.
Or Lad, maybe.
One of that. Yeah, probably Lad. So anyway, I always think that. But I people know the station and the kind of the foundation of now the track and, you know, the other local conferences the station's covered over the years.
Yep, looking forward to tonight. Well, we can take a little bit of a breather and get ready to bring the Pigskin playoff preview on the airways again. You can join us at 7 o'clock tonight for that. We'll probably go, I don't know, until around 10 or so. No one's going to come in and yell at us to get off the air anymore, so that's good.
Well,
right?
And the other thing, too, about the playoffs that I love is, you know, when you're the local school, kind of the last school standing, you have more and more of the other communities kind of following along, not only coming to the games, but I always loved it, you know, in the prime 90s era when John and Chuck were on the air, that you knew that it was like, this is the echo chamber of this area because everybody's listening to those games. Yep. And that connection. And also, and that's my memory of the station. That's my memory is that era.
You know what else before we wrap up? Guess who I ran into at the Alito McDonald's? It would have been on Wednesday. I was in there getting something for breakfast, right? You know who I ran into in there?
Bill Breeden.
He called me over, and what do you think he wanted to talk about? Playoff
Probably
football.
Not about fishing.
Not with me. I wouldn't know what to say about that. He knows that about me. But he wanted to know who the Rockridge Rockets were going to play and how deep I thought they could go.
Yeah, well, so. I always think when I watch Ryan Lower play, the terminology that Bill Breeden would always say back in that era, tough hombre.
Yeah,
tough
that's hombre. What he is.
Like, he's a tough
him hombre. And Sowards and McKeg and Tanner Dye and those boys and Levi Junis. Yeah, I can't wait to watch them play in the postseason. So we'll talk more about that tonight on the Pigskin Player Preview. Anything else you want to mention before we wrap up? Just thank you to Steve Soucy. Great guest, great work. He is the man when it comes to high school football and definitely covers it the right way. We're very fortunate he joined us this morning on like 3 hours of sleep getting up to talk on Sportsline with us. So thank you, Mr. Soucy, the GOAT of high school football
and I
coverage.
Support, the main reason I will always love him is because I'm all about supporting local journalism.
And 100%. It's very important.
And that's why you don't complain about the paywall. Support the paywall. Pay through the paywall for journalism like that because they deserve it. And we need more stuff like
when
that.
When you go to any other business, you pay for the service.
That's right.
So journalism, 100%.
All right, so 7 o'clock, we'll have Benny's Pizza. We'll be broadcasting live from downtown Alito. Tip of the cap again to our good buddy Dale Jones.
He was in here the other day.
Well, I was going to ask him because I didn't. So let's see. I didn't make the trip to Rock Falls for volleyball. I don't know if he did or not. But if I would have, I would have said, where were you at? Why didn't you make the trip to Rock Falls? You got to come all the way across the state to watch volleyball. But I know he enjoyed. Also, by the way, I heard from Chad Bell this morning. Love listening to him out farming. And he said he went to bed listening to Ty Taylor and got up this morning listening to Ty Taylor. So.
Find a different radio You're station to listen to is my advice to
me. He'll
Mr.
be
Bell.
Listening tonight at 7 o'clock.
The thing I like about Chad Bell is always going to learn stuff about agriculture on his Facebook. He does a great job with some
100%.
Of those videos he posts. Yeah, he's very informative. So,
and he was the
shout
biggest,
out to Chad Bell's
He was
Facebook.
The biggest Sherrard Tiger boys basketball fan last year because he's good buddies with Alex Johnson.
He'll be at all the games this year, too. Sorry, anything else? Are we ready to wrap
no,
it up?
No, I'm ready for tonight. I'm glad I'm back in the saddle to do the playoff show because I've done it every year since 1990 and it began so organically. And we should bring John Hoshot out of retirement and let him do some of this stuff. Too, but he'll be listening to tonight.
He will
probably.
Be. All right, well, that'll wrap up Sportsline from inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. Again, thank you to our guest Steve Soucy from Friday Night Drive for joining us to break down the latest in postseason bracket projections. Again, the Pigskin Playoff Preview on WRMJ, our annual tradition, gets underway at 7 o'clock tonight. You can listen here on 102.3 FM, online at WRMJ.com, streaming on the WRMJ app as well. However you're listening right now, you can do that the same tonight. Hope you can join us at 7 o'clock. For Jim Taylor, I'm Ty Taylor for WRMJ Sports from inside the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.